Hello, welcome to the reading of the Sioux City Journal for Thursday, December 31st, 2020, and I'm your volunteer reader, Amy B. Happy New Year's Eve, everybody! Let's start out with the weather as we always do. In Sioux City, the high will be 30 today with a low of 8. Tomorrow, New Year's Day, the high will be 26 with a low of 13 in Sioux City. On Saturday, plenty of sun with a high of 28 and a low of 13. On Sunday, abundant sunshine with a high of 35 and a low of 21. And on Monday, a high of 41 is projected at a low of 21. Today, the sun will set at 5:03 p.m. And tomorrow, on Friday, the sun will rise at 7:55 a.m. and the sun will set at 5:04 p.m. Let's turn back now to the front page of the journal and start out with a mini editorial, as we always do. This one is by Anne Knutson of Sioux City. She writes, "I am willing to consider both the positive and negative information I read and hear about President-elect Biden. How many Trump supporters are willing to consider realistically all the information revealed about Donald Trump? Or are any negatives automatically fake news?" Again, that was written by Ann Knutson of Sioux City. Our front page story today is "Lawman Ready to Take the Helm" by Nick Heitrek. Sheehan plans visibility. If it weren't for a few hours spent in a Sioux City police car when he was a college freshman, Chad Sheehan might be in the middle of a teaching and coaching career right now. Before you jump to conclusions, Sheehan didn't get the up-close look at the inside of a police cruiser because of delinquent behavior. An introduction to criminal justice class he was taking required a ride-along with an officer, so he spent a night on patrol with Pat Brayfogle, now a Sioux City Police Department lieutenant. "I was hooked," Sheehan said. "The excitement, the variety, it really fit my personality. I just realized that this was something I could see being excited about." Previously undecided between a career in law enforcement or teaching, Sheehan's mind was made up. Now, 29 years later, the 48-year-old Sioux City native is preparing to take over as Woodbury County Sheriff. "I felt the opportunity to run as sheriff would give me the opportunity to be a voice for the profession, which I have always been proud of," Sheehan said. Sheehan, a 1991 East High graduate, will be sworn in Saturday, succeeding Dave Drew, who was retiring after serving 2 4-year terms. Little did he know at the time, but Sheehan got his first glimpse of the office when he was a kid. Walking to Whittier Elementary School, he'd see now-retired Sheriff's Deputy Brad Carlson, who lived on the same street, putting his police dog into his car and leaving for work. As a young boy, that was pretty cool. "You had a guy in a uniform, a squad car, and a dog," Sheehan said. As a young officer with the South Sioux City Police Department from 1994 to 98, Sheehan leaned on the Woodbury County Sheriff's experienced deputies for help starting a canine program. After spending a couple of years with the Dakota County Sheriff's Office, he was hired by the Sioux City Police Department in 1999. He worked in various roles with the Sioux City Department as a community policing officer who attended meetings to listen to the public's concerns, a school resource officer, and in the Crime Prevention Bureau, among others. Sheehan attended training seminars on active shooters and realized he could improve on the classes being taught. He started his own business, Sheehan Strategic Solutions, a consulting company that provides training classes for responses to active shooter incidents and workplace violence. He initially taught the classes during his days off and vacation time, but when he began getting more requests than he could handle, he chose early retirement from the department in 2016, to run his business full-time. Despite not being involved in day-to-day law enforcement activities, Sheehan still had that urge. "I always had the desire to lead a law enforcement organization," he said. When the Republican Drew announced in January that he would not be seeking re-election, Sheehan saw his chance, announcing his candidacy in March. In the June Republican primary election, Sheehan defeated Sheriff's Major Todd Weick. He was unopposed in the November general election. With no opponent, Sheehan said he was able to begin the learning process early. He has spent months since his primary win familiarizing himself with the office, shadowing Drew, and sitting in on meetings of the Woodbury County Law Enforcement Center Authority, which will oversee construction of the $50 million jail and law enforcement center approved by the voters in March. Since the November election, Sheehan said he's been meeting individually with sheriff's employees in an effort to better know the people he'll be leading. "I am the new guy. I am an outsider," he said. "I understand as the new guy, I have to prove myself to them." When declaring his candidacy, Sheehan said his focus would be on public safety, responsible and efficient budgeting, enhanced training, and building strong partnerships through community policing. He started following up on those priorities. On his behalf, Drew's administration has already received board approval for a new sergeant position to oversee a professional standards division to make sure the office employs the best practices and procedures. He also has plans to name a second jail lieutenant and reallocate a sergeant to oversee training. Maintaining a presence in the community will remain a priority. Sheehan plans to host town hall meetings to gather citizen input and wants his deputies to interact with the public. "We will continue to make a focus that when they're out, they're getting out of their cars and talking to people," he said. When possible, Sheehan said, he plans to work a few patrol shifts, appearing at accident and crime scenes, and staying involved in the daily duties of the job. "I do plan on being out as much as I can in the community," he said. "This is definitely a career field that leading by example and working alongside your people is the best way to get the most out of the people you're working with." We're turning back now to page A2, and we've got our COVID article today. 4 COVID-related deaths reported in Siouxland. 4 more deaths attributed to the novel coronavirus were reported in Siouxland on Wednesday. Iowa Department of Public Health statistics showed that Woodbury County recorded its 165th death, and Dickinson County had 2 deaths, raising its totals to 17. Yankton County in South Dakota now has had 25 reported deaths after 1 new death was recorded on Wednesday. There were 13 deaths across 7 counties on Tuesday. The percentage of positive tests has begun to level off in many Siouxland counties. Woodbury County's 14-day average of positive tests is 13.5%, down just 0.3% from a week ago. In more recent days, the county's 7-day positive average is 13%, an increase of 1% in the past week. Health officials have said anything above 5% is a concern. Many counties have reported a lower number of positive cases in the past 7 days, likely due in part to the Christmas holiday in which few tests would have been performed. Monona County has seen just 6 positive cases in the past week, given the county a 7-day positive average of 2%. The 14-day average in Monona County is 6.9%. Crawford County has seen an increase in the percentage of positive cases in the past week. The 7-day average increased to 21% in Crawford County, up from 16%. The county's 14-day average has risen from 23 to 25.3%. Statewide, Iowa's 7-day average of positive tests is 9.9% and the 14-day average is 12.1%. Hospitalizations in Woodbury County have remained steady. The Siouxland District Health Department on Wednesday reported 54 COVID patients hospitalized in either Unity Point St. Luke's and Mercy One Siouxland Medical Center in Sioux City, 35 of them due to the illness. The hospitals had 60 COVID patients 2 weeks ago and 56 a week ago. The total ranged from 54 to 59 in the past week. The Iowa Department of Public Health reported that the number of patients hospitalized in Region 3 of Iowa's Regional Medical Coordination Centers, a grouping that includes several Northwest Iowa counties, was 87, down from 93 a day earlier, and down significantly from 214 on December 1st. As of 5 p.m. Wednesday, 14 patients were in intensive care units, an increase from 11 a day earlier. Just 4 patients in the region were on ventilators. Now looking at our graphic that we always see on Thursdays, coronavirus cases in our area. South Dakota has had 98,720 active cases. Nebraska has had 163,781. Iowa has had 278,963. Looking at counties now in our area, in South Dakota, Yankton County, 2,510 cases with 25 deaths. Clay County, 1,623 cases with 11 deaths. Union County, 1,593 cases with 30 deaths. In Nebraska, Cedar County has had 711 cases with 9 deaths. Dixon County has had 543 cases with 11 deaths. Wayne County has had 929 cases with 5 deaths. Thurston County has had 900 cases with 9 deaths. And Dakota County has had 3,593 cases with 56 deaths. In Iowa, Lyon County has had 1,248 cases with 25 deaths. Osceola County, 609 cases with 7 deaths. Dickinson County, 1,681 cases with 17 deaths. Sioux County has had 4,314 cases with 43 deaths. O'Brien County, 1,583 cases with 53 deaths. Excuse me. Clay County has had 1,531 cases with 12 deaths. Plymouth County has seen 3,334 cases with 51 deaths. Cherokee County, 1,224 cases with 20 deaths. Buena Vista County, 3,671 cases with 25 deaths. Woodbury County, 12,209 cases with 165 deaths. Ida County, 689 cases with 26 deaths. Sac County, 1,031 cases with 14 deaths. Monona County, 542 cases with 15 deaths. And Crawford County has had 2,109 cases with 22 deaths. Looking at our briefs, looks like there's just one today. Man charged with grand theft and embezzlement. Elk Point, South Dakota. A Dakota Dunes man faces charges of taking up to $500,000 from a North Sioux City company. A Union County grand jury on December 14th filed a 2-count indictment against Joshua McElroy, age 33, charging him with grand theft and embezzlement of property received in trust. An arrest warrant was served on Monday, and McElroy posted bond. An initial appearance is scheduled for January 7th in Union County Circuit Court. The indictment alleges that from May 1st, 2017 through April 15th, 2020, McElroy took or exercised unauthorized control over property belonging to Murphy Insulation Inc. and or Murphy Mechanical Insulation Inc. and valued at more than $100,000, but less than or equal to $500,000. During the same time period, McElroy is charged with unlawfully using the company's property that had been entrusted to him, and that he did so with the intent to defraud the company. Returning now to page A6, so we can go to our next article, and that is Sioux City sees driest year since 1997. The 4 inches of snow that fell on Sioux City Tuesday was low in moisture content, typical of a year that will go down as the city's driest in 23 years. The snowfall equated to 0.26 inches of rain, pushing Sioux City's 2020 precipitation total to 20.09 inches, more than 7 inches below the normal annual total of 27.7 inches. With no precipitation in Thursday's forecast, Sioux City's total likely will be the lowest since 18.44 inches in 1997, and 2020 will rank as the 16th driest year in records that date back to 1889. Other areas of northwest Iowa will end the year even drier. "There's no one reason why western Iowa has been drier than normal this year," said Justin Gleason, Iowa's state climatologist. Gleason said that if you divide Iowa at Interstate 35, the eastern half typically saw normal to above normal precipitation. The western half of the state was dry and continues to be so. The United States Drought Monitor puts much of this corner of the state in moderate to severe drought. A small swath of Siouxland closer to the Minnesota border is a step worse at extreme drought. "That corner of the state consistently missed out on large weather systems," Gleason said, "of rainfall in 2020. Quite the departure from 2019, when Sioux City received 33.47 inches of precipitation. Thunderstorm systems often went around western Iowa this summer and fall," Gleason said, "partly as a result of days of wind and low humidity in May and June that dried out the soil, leaving less moisture on the ground to help feed thunderstorms. Western Iowa seems to be the dry island," Gleason said. "A wet 2019 helped the region weather this year's dry conditions. With soil saturated through much of the area at the beginning of the year, crops were able to tap into that plentiful subsoil moisture across the region throughout the summer. Farmers won't have that luxury when the 2021 growing season begins." Gleason said many areas of the region will need 10 to 12 inches of rain in the spring to fully recharge subsoil moisture levels. "Early indications show that northwest Iowa could bounce back in the first half of 2021. Gleason said the January through March outlook shows an equal chance of below or above normal precipitation. An outlook for the beginning of the growing season from April to June shows elevated chances for wetter conditions." Well, Stephen Groves writes that business owners in South Dakota are frustrated at the pace of coronavirus grants. As an initial deadline passed Wednesday for South Dakota's $450 million grant program to help small businesses upended by the pandemic, fewer than 20% of nearly 6,000 applicants have seen any money. The deadline has been extended by the federal government, but some business owners expressed frustration of what they described as snags in the application process and a months-long wait for the grants. "The grant program is a cornerstone of Republican Governor Kristi Noem's plan to spend $1.25 billion in federal coronavirus money, sending nearly a third to small businesses, startups, and nonprofits that can show they've been hurt financially by the pandemic. But from bed and breakfasts in Sioux Falls to rodeo operators in Pierre, business owners have been left waiting for word on the relief as they try to adapt to the economy and uncertainty and to shape plans for next year. It's so sad. I mean, I'm drowning, said Michael Haskett, who owns a Sioux Falls cafe. He's among the few whose applications have been even processed. He received just over $10,000 last week and was waiting to hear on his application for a second round of grants that the governor opened on December 11th. But Haskett has not heard of anyone else in the Sioux Falls restaurant business who has received funds. Restaurants, in the best of times, we make razor-thin margins, he said. Right now we're losing, and we are losing hard. Haskett began his application once the first round of grants opened in October. At that time, a surge of coronavirus infections was gaining force in South Dakota. The $450 million program, which the legislature endorsed, promised to give a boost to small businesses that could show a downturn from last year. The state's economy had weathered the pandemic relatively well compared with other states, something Noem had emphasized to defend her decision to forego business closures or restrictions on bars and restaurants. Business owners like Haskett said they have still seen big reductions in business, especially when cases surged in November. More recently, the average number of daily cases dropped by 43% over the last 2 weeks, according to Johns Hopkins researchers. Health officials reported a small uptick Wednesday, reporting 562 new positive cases and 18 deaths from COVID-19. I don't like getting a handout, but I also don't want people getting sick, Haskett said, describing how he had cut hours and seating capacity at his cafe. South Dakota's Bureau of Finance and Management, to implement the program, signed a $6 million contract with Guidehouse, Inc., a Virginia-based technology consultant. Senator Reynold Nasiba, a Democrat from Sioux Falls, said he was deeply disappointed and frustrated with the company after hearing about the delays and technical snags. Guidehouse did not immediately respond to a request for comment on the program. The Bureau of Finance and Management has reported that just 16%, or 951 out of 5,912 small businesses, startups, and nonprofits that applied, have even received a total of about $86 million total. The state initially faced a deadline Wednesday set by Congress to allocate all the funds, but that was extended through next year, when the president signed a pandemic relief package bill on Sunday. I think there were a lot of nuances that were hard to anticipate when they were putting the program together in October, said Nathan Sanderson, the director of the South Dakota Retailers Association. He said the delays were caused by holdups like explaining ownership changes or gathering the right paperwork. Bree Corco, who operates a rodeo business, said she diligently checked her email and began calling the program's helpline every few days for updates. She had to make a few corrections to her application that she felt should have been easy to catch by a better design process. Other business owners, such as Karen Johnson, who operates a bed and breakfast in Sioux Falls, said they were asked to correct errors that they had not made. Corco was grateful for the prospect of help and said she was proud of how South Dakota had approached the pandemic, but she felt frustrated trying to plan for the uncertain economic prospects of next year while still trying to repay government loans she received in the spring. You don't want to have to get so desperate that you're going to have to go sell some good bucking horses or good bucking bulls to make ends meet, she said. Representative Chris Carr, a Sioux Falls Republican, said Guidehouse has increased its staff on the project. He said using a contractor was the best way to implement a large program in a matter of months. Still, he said that as a small business owner himself, he understood the frustration. Every dollar counts and every day counts, he said. Turning to our next page with regional news, there's a little article about Nebraska in our area. Nebraska is participating in a test of new potential vaccine. The University of Nebraska Medical Center and Nebraska Medicine are participating in national testing of a potential new coronavirus vaccine for adults. The medical center plans to enroll 1,000 study participants for the clinical trial. The potential vaccine was developed by Novavax, Inc., a U.S. biotechnology company which plans to enroll 30,000 adults in the U.S. and Mexico. People who won't be receiving the Pfizer or Moderna vaccines in the next 3 to 6 months are encouraged to consider enrolling in the trial. The vaccine candidate is a protein-based vaccine created from the coronavirus spike protein and an added component that boosts a person's immune response to stimulate higher levels of antibodies. Thousands of participants have been enrolled across several large studies to test possible vaccines. Nebraska had 517 hospitalized coronavirus patients as of Tuesday evening, down from the November 20th high of 987, but still higher than the total earlier in the pandemic. Nebraska has confirmed 163,781 virus cases and 1,603 deaths since the pandemic began. There were 932 cases reported on Tuesday. We've got another regional article. This one is about a fire in Yankton, South Dakota. Fire began in a doghouse. Authorities say a house fire believed to have started when a doghouse heater failed during a snowstorm was thought to be under control on Monday night, only to flare up early Tuesday and destroy a rural South Dakota home. The Yankton Fire Department said the electrical fire that began in the doghouse about 7 p.m. Monday engulfed a shed, spread to the side of the house, and settled into the attic. The fire also burned through a propane line attached to a 125-gallon tank. Firefighters were at the home for 2.5 hours on Monday night and thought they had put out the blaze, which displaced 4 people and the dog, Deputy Chief and Fire Marshal Larry Nichols told the Yankton Press and Dakotan. When Nichols left the scene, 2 rooms had sustained water damage and light smoke damage was reported elsewhere, but the house was in good enough condition that the heat was still on, he said. Firefighters cut holes in the house's metal roof, but may not have located all of the burning material, leading to Tuesday's rekindling, the deputy chief said. The house had only an insulated truss space between the cathedral ceilings and the roof, which Nichols said was a factor in the flare-up. Firefighters were called back to the scene around 5:15 a.m. Tuesday, when flames were shooting from the roof. By that time, the storm had made the roof too slick to walk on. Our guesstimate now is that the house was totaled, Nichols said. The dog's not happy he lost his house, but there were no injuries. We don't have any opinions today, but I'm going to quickly read the quote of the day and today's Bible verse before we turn to our obituaries. Today's quote comes from Madeline L'Engle. As you know, she was the author of A Wrinkle in Time. She wrote, "The great thing about getting older is that you don't lose all the other ages you've been." Today's Bible verse is from Matthew 12:29. "Or again, how can anyone enter a strong man's house and carry off his possessions unless he first ties up the strong man? Then he can rob his house." Well, that's today's Bible verse in the Sioux City Journal. I don't know why, but that's what it was. Well, everybody, we've reached the halfway point. You are listening to the reading of the Sioux City Journal for today, which is New Year's Eve, Thursday, December 31st, 2020, on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Now let's turn to today's obituaries. I just want to note that the obituaries are a headline that Gilligan's Island star Dawn Wells, who played Marianne, died of COVID-19. Here's today's local obituaries. From South Sioux City, Norma Jean Daly. Norma Jean Daly, age 83, of South Sioux City, passed away Monday, December 28, 2020. Services will be 10 a.m. Saturday at Moore and Becker Hunt Funeral Home. Burial will be at St. Michael Cemetery. Norma was born, the daughter of Marvin and Laverne Clark Phelps, on May 14, 1937, in Sioux City. She graduated from Helen High School in 1955. She then completed her CNA training. Norma married John W. Daly on July 26, 1956, in Danville, Kentucky. Norma worked at Yonkers, MCI, IBP, and as a self-employed CNA over the years. From Sioux City, Anna V. Edgington Cable. Anna V. Edgington Cable, age 90, of Sioux City, passed away Sunday, December 27, 2020. Graveside services will be 2 p.m. Monday in Memorial Park Cemetery. Visitation will be from 1 to 3 p.m. Saturday at Waterbury Funeral Service in Sioux City, 4125 Orleans Avenue. Anna V. Edgington Cable was born September 28, 1930, in Mapleton, Iowa, the daughter of Ernest and Stella Fuller Jackson. Anna grew up in Sioux City and graduated from East High School. She married Howard Edgington in 1949. He later passed in 1979. Anna married Duane Cable in 1982. She worked for a couple of companies, including Wind Charger, later known as Zenith, and Palmer's Candy. She enjoyed crocheting. Anna was one of a kind. All the neighborhood kids called her grandma wherever she lived. From Sioux City, Wanda E. Mosier. Wanda E. Mosier, age 81, of Sioux City, passed away Thursday, December 24, 2020, at her home, surrounded by her family. Services will be 10 a.m. Saturday at Morningside Lutheran Church. Visitation will be 1 hour prior to services at the church. Waterbury Funeral Service of Sioux City is assisting the family with arrangements. Wanda was born January 17, 1939, at Lorenz, Iowa, the daughter of J. Laverne and Velma Keel Smith. She went to Leeds High School until her junior year. Her family moved to Sioux Falls, South Dakota, in 1955. She graduated in 1957 from Sioux Falls High School. Wanda continued her education at Nettleton Business School, receiving her accounting degree in 1958. Wanda married Larry Mosier on August 24, 1958, in Sioux Falls. They later divorced in 1972. Over the years, Wanda worked at Kalin's Fashion and Furs, Tractor Supply, while living in Sioux City. She then moved to Mason City, Iowa, and worked for Iowa Kemper Economy Insurance and Air Care, Inc., until retiring in 2011. In 2013, she moved back to Sioux City to be with her family. From Sergeant Bluff, Lorne L. Fatland, age 52, died Monday, December 28, 2020, arrangements pending with Waterbury Funeral Service of Sergeant Bluff. From Sioux City, Clarence Ron Strom, age 89, died Wednesday, December 30th, 2020. Arrangements are with Meyer Brothers Colonial Chapel. From Kingsley, Iowa, Curtis Ott, age 85, died Wednesday, December 23rd, 2020. Services January 5th, 10:30 a.m. at St. Michael Catholic Church in Kingsley. Burial, St. Michael Cemetery. Visitation, January 4th from 5 to 7 p.m., Rhodey Funeral Home in Kingsley. From Kingsley, Marianne Bapp, spelled B-A-P-P-E, age 87, died Thursday, December 24th, 2020. Visitation, January 5th, from 5 to 7 p.m., Rhody Funeral Home. From Huron, South Dakota, Betty Leola Spies, spelled S-P-I-E-S, age 86, died Monday, December 21st, 2020. No public services. Interment, Willow Township Cemetery, Holly Springs, Iowa. Memorial celebration at a later date. Arrangements with Porter Funeral Home of Hudson. From Marcus, Iowa, Bonnie J. Wilkins, age 76, died Saturday, December 26, 2020. Joint services for Bonnie and husband Fred at a later date. Trinity Lutheran Church, Marcus. Arrangements with Ernest Johnson Funeral Home in Marcus. From Sioux City, Joanne G. Joe Smith, age 92, died Tuesday, December 29th, 2020. Services January 5th at 10:30 a.m., Mater D. Parish, Immaculate Conception Catholic Church. Interment, Calvary Cemetery. Visitation, 1 hour prior to the service time at the church. Arrangements are with Christy Smith Funeral Homes, Morningside Chapel. From Sioux City, Gerald D. Calhoun, age 84, died Tuesday, December 29th, 2020. Services, January 6th at 9:30 a.m., Sacred Heart Catholic Church in Sioux City. Burial after the service, Calvary Cemetery, with military honors. Visitation, January 5th from 4 to 8 p.m. at Meyer Brothers Colonial Chapel. From Jefferson, South Dakota, Barbara Fay Lechter, spelled L-E-T-C-H-E-R, age 69, died Sunday, December 20th, 2020. Services January 2nd at 1 p.m., Meyer Brothers Colonial Chapel. Visitation 1 hour prior to the service time at the funeral home. And that concludes today's obituaries. Turning to some Weekender stories, this one's by Earl Horlick. It's entitled, Sharing the Gospel. Church Deacon devotes New Year's Day radio programming to untapped talent. The small wood-paneled office at James Rainey's Northside home is becoming increasingly known to a global audience. That's because the office, which is where all GITA radio gospel programming emanates from, can be seen on such social media platforms as Facebook, YouTube, Twitch, Periscope, and soon, Roku TV. The station is on the air 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, Rainey explained. I live stream beginning at 7 p.m. every weeknight and at 5 p.m. on Saturdays and Sundays, which is amazing since Rainey, a Woodhouse auto dealership car salesman, began GITA radio, or Gospel in the Air radio, as a hobby, as well as a way to reach out to parishioners at Mount Zion Missionary Baptist Church, where he is a deacon. When I started GITA in 2011, it was attracting a handful of people, he said. Now I can be reaching thousands of people on any number of platforms. This is great news for audiences who enjoy music from gospel luminaries like Kirk Franklin and Ann Nesby, as well as up-and-coming indie talent like Lemmy Battles. In fact, independent, unsigned artists will be the focus of GITA programming from midnight to 11:59 p.m. on Friday. That's a little confusing. Midnight to 11:59 p.m.? That's what it says. For the fifth year in a row, I'm devoting the first day of the year to musicians who deserve to be heard, Rainey said. There are so many voices that deserve to be heard. A Rockford, Illinois native, Rainey started playing music at age 5. I started playing classical music by the time I turned 8, and I took up the bass guitar at age 10, he remembered. When he turned 15, Rainey began collecting gospel records, and at age 20, he began picking up DJing gigs. My life has always centered around the church, he said. Gospel music was a big part of that experience. And so has GITA Radio, which has an increased importance during the coronavirus pandemic. I have a pre-existing issue that has prevented me from going to Woodhouse since April, Rainey said. My kids taught me how to live stream over Facebook, and I discovered what a powerful tool that can be. Making sure that GITA Radio is available on multiple platforms has increased its awareness to record producers, promoters, and artists. Just recently, I've received 150 pieces from 60 different artists, Rainey said. I am expecting much more to come over the next few days. In addition, GITA Radio has been growing its audience base. Due to COVID, people are at home more and need to hear the gospel in troubled times, Rainey said. GITA has been a godsend for me, and hopefully it has been a godsend for others. For Rainey, the streaming radio station has become a ministry for all those who seek it, which is why he's turning GITA Radio into a nonprofit organization where at-risk kids can learn about radio production. Never in a million years did I think GITA would go beyond a hobby for me, Rainey said. Now I want to share what I've learned with a new generation. Perhaps he'll be able to help the next big name in gospel music, right? There are some powerful voices out there, Rainey said, and they deserve to be heard. So again, there is going to be a New Year's Day Independent Artists Gospel Music event from midnight tonight to 11:59 p.m. on Friday. And that is at gitaradio.com. And GITA Radio streams continuous gospel music 7 days a week at gitaradio.com. Ooh, our next story is entitled A Year in Eats, and it's written by Earl Horlick. 2020 brought in innovative foods, new business models, as industry struggled with a pandemic. During the past 365 days, Siouxland diners have seen some intriguing newcomers. Please say hello to Rolled Ice Cream at 79 degrees, as well as the tricked-out Puffle Sandwiches at High Ground Cafe and Espresso Bar. And some sad departures. The Garden Cafe's George Litres decided to retire to his native Greece. However, 2020 will go in the books as the year in which the food and hospitality industry forever changed. We're doing everything we can to get by. In March, Iowa Governor Reynolds declared a statewide public health disaster emergency and limited gatherings to 10 people. This closed restaurants and bars, among other businesses, in response to the coronavirus outbreak. By implementing such temporary measures, many restaurants had to discontinue their dine-in trade while resorting to drive-through, carry-out, and delivery-only business as a way to stay afloat. Other restaurants simply closed up shop, waiting out the ban that was lifted months later. This was especially hard for Pease Pizza House owner Joe Sitzman, who always wanted his restaurants in Lamar's and Dakota Dunes to stay on the culinary cutting edge. The big new trend in 2020 is there isn't one, Sitzman said, sitting outside of Pease Pizza House, Dakota Dunes dining room. As an industry, we're all hunkering down and doing everything we can to get by. Non-traditional eateries flourished in the face of COVID. While traditional eateries struggled to regain their pre-pandemic customers, non-traditional businesses flourished. Oh, you guys, there's all kinds of pictures of food here. I'm getting hungry. This included the Jolly Time Coated Kernels retail store, which remained open when other operations were forced to shut down. Food trucks like Big Papa's Grub on the Run, specializing in comfort food favorites, Taco and Madre, Southern California and Mexican cuisine, and Lewis Brothers BBQ, Down Home Vittles, reported huge gains in business, with patrons preferring outdoor eating. Proprietor Tyson Sanchez said his popular Dagas on Wheels food truck had its best season after 5 years in business. Because of that greater recognition, Sanchez decided to expand his operation to include Dagas on Broadway, a new sit-down restaurant and sports bar in Dakota City, Nebraska. With a traditional American steakhouse menu, along with a few tips of the sombrero to south of the border cuisine, Dagas opened at 100 North Main Street, the former site of the much-remembered Hungry Steakhouse. "We really want Dagas on Broadway to become a destination place for Dakota City," Sanchez said. "We want to bring people to town." While Sanchez was hoping to draw diners to the Dakota County seat, other Siouxland restaurateurs were opening their eateries for Far East treats. Koi Sushi and Steakhouse brought in tempura, teriyaki, and fine Japanese dining to 1790 Hamilton Boulevard. Similarly, 79 Degree introduced Vietnamese street food faves, including rolled ice cream, bubble tea, and banh mi sandwiches, to a strip mall shop located at 3087 Floyd Boulevard. Introducing a surprisingly eclectic menu, High Ground Cafe and Espresso Bar owner Corey Larkin gave customers what they expected, caffeinated drinks with plenty of zing, plus a few audacious eats. Specifically, patrons at the 202 North Derby Lane North Sioux City Coffee House could start their day with a puffle. Think of a puffle as being a puffed-out waffle in which you can stuff something either sweet or savory. Puffles are a street food that originated in Hong Kong, and they're now very popular on the West and East Coasts, Larkin explained. Highground's most bust about puffle is its brekkie. That consists of a lightly sweetened bubble waffle and is crammed with full of early morning eats like ham, bacon, scrambled eggs, avocado, and cheddar cheese. A first-time cafe owner, Larkin brought new ideas to the Siouxland culinary scene. On the other hand, the community has also seen some familiar faces popping up. Veteran chef and original owner Brian Reese brought back Rebo's, a Siouxland favorite following a hiatus. Featuring New Mexican and Caribbean fare, the new Rebo's, located at 1107 4th Street, is a collaboration between Reese and business partner Jesus Sanchez in the Key Club Beer Can Alley. Following a three-year break, Diamond Thai Cuisine founder Pete Utachu brought his flavorful Southeast Asian cuisine to the recently opened Pete's Thai on 5th Street, 507 5th Street, in December. Everyone was saying, "Welcome back, Pete. We missed you, Pete," the amiable Utachu said with a big smile. Then they asked, "You're still going to be making the pumpkin curry, the pad thai, and the spicy wok noodle, aren't you?" "It feels good to be back in Sioux City," he added. "It's good to be home." Located exactly one block north of Pete's is a building that stayed vacant for more than 40 years. A 10-story Art Deco-style hotel, the Warrior Hotel at 525 6th Street, is a redux of the former Warrior, which brought elegance to downtown Sioux City until the mid-1970s. This newly restored jewel also included Woodbury's, an American steakhouse on the hotel's second floor. With a cutting-edge food and drink menu, Warrior Hotel sales and marketing director Lila Planbeck said the locale is drawing oohs and ahs from the public. "It certainly feels like you're walking into a movie," she suggested. "You immediately ask yourself, what year is this? Or, are we in Chicago or Kansas City?" Planbeck acknowledged opening in 2020 did bring a few heartaches. "People ask if it's been challenging to open up during a worldwide pandemic," she said. "Of course. Nobody could have predicted COVID-19, but we think we'll see support from our hotel guests, as well as from people from our community. With everybody staying close to home, this is a perfect time for a staycation," Planbeck continued. "You can experience a weekend, a night, or just a meal in a luxury facility without having to leave Sioux City." Taken a bit further, Siouxlandiners could sample fare from the world without having to leave the area. Looking ahead to 2021, the pandemic forced us to change our business overnight, the marquee owner, Mitch Martin, said. In the case of the 1225 4th Street Music Club, Martin said it began hosting trivia and movie nights when entertainment acts became scarce. P's Pizza House Sitzman agreed. We may never get back to where we were, but we need to keep our doors open, he said. As an industry, we're doing everything we can to get by. Well, here's the Sioux City Strange article for today. The first one is, The Garage That Wasn't Meant to Be. It was too good a deal to be true. Sign a contract, and you get $50 and a free business to boot. A contractor was arrested on December 18th and charged with accepting more than $14,000 to build a garage, and then he spent the money rather than performing the work. Drew Wilshire Gertis, age 24, of Lamars, Iowa, was booked into the Woodbury County Jail on a charge of first-degree theft. According to a complaint filed in the case, the victim gave Wilshire Gertis a cashier's check for $14,243.96 on August 12th to build a garage. The check was deposited into the account of Wilshire Home Services. Police checked the bank records and found that the money had been spent. Wilshire Gertis told the victim that he had sold the business to another man. That man turned out to be a transient who told police he was given $50 to sign a contract transferring the business to him, the complaint said. Not a Merry Christmas. A Sioux Falls man was arrested in Sioux City on Christmas Day after an altercation with a police officer in the home of a relative who just wanted him to go away. 32-year-old Johnny Williams of Sioux Falls was at a family member's home on 22nd Street on Christmas night. The homeowner wanted him out, but he refused to leave, according to a criminal complaint. Sioux City police officers ordered Williams out, but again he refused and tried to attack the homeowner. He then grabbed a police officer around the upper body and neck area and assaulted the officer. He was told to put his hands behind his back, but he refused. Once Williams was taken down, he reached and grabbed the officer's gun and refused to relinquish it before he was eventually brought under control. He reportedly had slurred speech, bloodshot eyes, difficulty keeping his balance, and an overwhelming odor of marijuana emitting from his person. Williams was held in Woodbury County Jail on $5,000 bond. He faces charges including disarming a police officer, interfering with the official acts, trespassing, and failure to obey a police officer. There weren't very many sports stories in today's paper, but there's one here about Tammy Verbeek, who is Western Christian head volleyball coach. 1,000 memories. For Tammy Verbeek, 1,000 wins means at least 1,000 memories. As Verbeek put it, she will never remember all 1,000 victories over her past 25 years as a high school volleyball coach. What she does remember are the memories and relationships she's developed with her players and fellow coaches. Verbeek reached a rare milestone in 2020. Back in mid-October, Verbeek won her 1,000th match, which only two other coaches have achieved in Iowa. It took Verbeek only 25 years to reach that mark, meaning she's averaged 40 wins a season over the last quarter century. The gift Verbeek received for reaching 1,000 wins meant more to her than the actual achievement, though. They had a book made for me with all of my teams. They found pictures of all the teams I've ever coached, and that was neat to look back at. Now a lot of them are mothers, and a lot of them have gone on to coach, Verbeek said. I reflect on the memories of the players. I'm never going to remember all 1,000 wins, but what I do cherish are the memories and relationships that I've built throughout the years of coaching. That's what I value more than the wins. Verbeek started her head coaching career at Okoboji, and she spent 3 years there. Then Verbeek got the opportunity of a lifetime. Verbeek played volleyball at Western Christian for Tom Vandenbosch, and he was one of the reasons she wanted to get into coaching. Verbeek went on to play for Dort and then took the Okoboji job. When Sue Kuaima, who was a high school teammate of Verbeek's, stepped down at Western Christian, Verbeek applied for the head coaching job of her alma mater, which is also her parents' alma mater. Verbeek was named the next head coach at Western Christian and has since made the Wolfpack into a powerhouse program in Iowa. Two of Verbeek's three children are also graduates of Western Christian. Her daughter Ashton was part of the volleyball program. Her youngest son is a sophomore at Western Christian. Well, everybody, that does it for today's reading of the Sioux City Journal for New Year's Eve, Thursday, December 31st, 2020. I'm your volunteer reader, Amy B. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, at any time. Thanks for listening, and Happy New Year, everybody. I hope your 2021 is wonderful.